What he's telling us, once again, is that our modern anti-supernatural world has confused the copy with the original. Remember we saw this in lecture 2 on desire and joy, that the Freudians say that love is a lust that's sort of driven up. But he says, no, it's not lust giving way to love, but love gives way to lust. Once again, the higher is not a copy of the lower is a copy of the higher. Not sublimation like Freud says, but transposition or incarnation. Well, we're getting the exact same thing here. The witch is a modernist who wants us to believe that Aslan is just an imitation of an earthly cat. No, Lewis says, the cat is the imitation of Aslan. You see, for Lewis, material things are not the source of our religious yearnings. Heaven is the true original. The things of our world are but pale copies of the greater reality that is heaven. We've seen this many times in Lewis. This is one of my favorite expressions of it. Again, the cat is an imitation of Aslan, not vice versa. Finally, let us move on to one more chronicle, and that is The Horse and His Boy. This is perhaps the oddest of the chronicles. It is a tale of high adventure reminiscent of the Arabian Nights, the Odyssey, and the romances of Shakespeare. Now, what I mean by romances are the late plays that Shakespeare wrote, particularly Pericles, The Winter's Tale, and The Tempest. The Horse and His Boy has that same sense that the late romances of Shakespeare have. Something odd about this chronicle. It occurs simultaneously with the reign of King Peter and his three siblings. Remember at the end of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, the four children become kings and queens? Well, this story actually takes place during the last chapter of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Simultaneously, when Peter is king, this story takes place. And this is the only story, really, that does not focus on human children. Instead, our focus are two Narnian characters named Shasta, that's the boy, and Erebus, who is the girl. Now, although Shasta is a well-drawn and interesting character, he is finally an archetype. This is the closest to where the chronicles become allegorical. Because Shasta's interesting, but he's an archetype. He's a type. Listen, and you'll see what I mean. Shasta is the son of a Narnian prince who was separated at birth from his twin brother by an evil advisor who set him adrift on a boat where he was rescued and raised by a fisherman. That sounds like something out of late Shakespeare. It almost sounds like something out of the Star Wars trilogy. It is that kind of archetype that appears again and again throughout literature. And so Shasta is very much a type or an archetype. He's kidnapped out of Narnia, and so Shasta grows up in a country that is south of Narnia, a country called Kallerman. And Kallerman, I believe, was patterned on the Muslim Empire of the Middle Ages. If you read it, Kallerman seems to be based, during the Crusades and all, on that Muslim Empire. And in fact, the Kallermenes have their own deity called Tash. They don't worship Aslan. In fact, the Kallermenes consider the Narnians infidels, and the Narnians consider the Kallermenes heathens. So again, he's adding in, if you will, another religion, another culture, sort of combined. Well, during the course of the novel, the Kallermenes are planning to invade and conquer Narnia. But luckily, in accordance with a prophecy, Shasta learns about this conspiracy and, aided by a talking horse from Narnia named Bree, he actually escapes from Kallerman and saves Narnia from invasion. That's why it's called The Horse and His Boy. Bree is the horse and the boy is Shasta. Now, to help him, he is joined by Princess Erebus and her horse, Quinn. She has a talking horse too. And Erebus is another archetypal figure. What is Erebus? She is a queen who is running away rather than submit to an arranged royal marriage. So she's another character we recognize from folklore and fairy tale. The two of them work together, and in their dual search for freedom, they both become homeless sojourners. They become sort of like Oliver Twist. One of my favorite myths is the myth of the blue-blooded children. Because no matter what happens to them, they're basically, people think they're beggars. But because of the blue blood inside of them, they always conquer all the temptations that come their way. And to me, that's one of the most fun of the myths.